From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Russian chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov won a lot of games on the chessboard. He's moved beyond chess to become an outspoken critic of Vladimir Putin. Now he's looking at Barack Obama's foreign policy with Russia, Iran, Syria, and more, and sees a losing strategy, a power vacuum, trouble. This hour on Point, Garry Kasparov sizes up Obama's approach to the world, and Joseph Cirincione joins us to size up the Grand Master's take. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Has Obama's way worked? Does it need more time? Is it off somehow? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from New York is Garry Kasparov, chess grandmaster and former world chess champion, chairman of the Human Rights Foundation's International Council in New York. His recent op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, "The Rewards of the Obama Doctrine," is not a flattering analysis. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Garry Kasparov in New York, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
What's your fundamental problem with President Obama's approach to the world?
The world is less safe than 7 years ago. Not that it was very safe 7 years ago, but now we could see the deterioration all over the place. It's Russia's aggression against Ukraine. It's Middle East ablaze. China is building its military muscles and provoking neighboring nations. That's more than enough. And right now we are facing unprecedented refugee crisis in Europe. I believe the main reason for all these problems, not the only one, but the main reason, is the vacuum created by America's retreat. Not that I was surprised, because Obama said it in 2007, 2008, that he would like America to sort of walk away from the messy wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and to reduce America's engagement on the international arena. And he got a very substantial mandate from American voters, both in 2008 and was renewed in 2012. And it's probably natural that in history, there is a reason presidents and periods of history swing force. So that's the title of my new book, Winter is Coming, says it changes in seasons.
Americans were tired of war. They had had a lot of it. It seemed logical and welcome, I think, to many to support a man who said, let's rethink this. Let's rethink this bellicose posture that we've had.
Oh, absolutely. And I can remind you that Europeans in the 30s also were tired of not just wars, but memories of the World War I. And they wanted peace at any cost, and we know the outcome. If you want peace, it doesn't mean that everybody around you wants peace as well. And we have to admit the simple fact that there are quite a few dangerous regimes in the world that consider international conflict as the extension of their domestic policies. It's Vladimir Putin's Russia, it's Iranian mullahs, it's Chavistas in Venezuela, it's North Korea. And whether we like it or not, they can't stop this confrontational line, because it will lead to the demise of their domestic power.
Americans went to war in Iraq. We don't see paradise in Iraq. We went to war in Afghanistan. That's far from settled either. No paradise there. Obama says, let's talk, let's reach out, let's try a new way. Is this binary to you, Garry Kasparov? Are you saying, no, go back to the George W. Bush way, get the military ready?
No, I don't think that in international politics, in geopolitics, you can just play simple chess game. It's not black and white. This is not, either you make peace or you declare war. There are too many colors in between. And it was quite unfortunate that, the W pushed one side and then Obama pushed in the opposite side. In my book, Winter's Coming, I argued that probably, if somehow the Bush Doctrine could be used in early 90s, when America was all-powerful and could initiate the dramatic change in the world scene. I'm not saying starting wars all over the place, but to promote the reform of the United Nations and do many other things, like, to stop genocide in former Yugoslavia much earlier than in 1995, to stop genocide in Rwanda, many good things that America could do. But at that time, Bill Clinton looked inward, so he had other priorities than international affairs. I think that America still, you know, is the most powerful country in the world. But without America playing its role in the world as it used to play, we will see the rise of bad guys. It's not accidental that you know, Putin, who made Obama and Hillary Clinton fools after, you know, playing this reset policy game after his invasion of Georgia, state of Georgia. Now country. He's country of Georgia, yes, Republic of Georgia, people should say, yes. Now he's, you know, he's invading part of Ukraine and next Crimea, first annexation in world history since World War II, unless we count Saddam Hussein's annexation of Kuwait that failed. And now we could see Putin's troops allying with Iranians, and they are in Syria. So there's no vacuum in the international politics. And the moment America walks out, somebody else gets in.
Garry Kasparov's new book coming out next month is Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. There's a lot to look at here. Could we start with Russia? It's your home country, the place you perhaps know best. Look over the Obama years in our relationship with Russia and Vladimir Putin. What would you have done differently, up to and including Crimea and Ukraine?
Yeah, I think we should look for the context of the relations with new Russia by all U.S. presidents. And my book is not only just about Obama and Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I talked about Bush 41, about Clinton's era, about Bush 43. And I was not very complimentary about all these presidents because they failed to come up with a comprehensive strategy to make Russia a potential ally and a friend. And it was more about building personal relations rather than creating sort of institutional ties. It's probably important for your listeners to remember that the first time the Iranian nuclear issue was raised in the discussions between these two countries was in 1995. It's Bill Clinton who raised this issue with Boris Yeltsin, and Boris Yeltsin, you know, played it down, and Clinton ignored it. So 20 years ago, American intelligence community already knew about the potential problem. And at that time, definitely Bill Clinton could do a much better job by pushing Russians to walk away from supplying Iran with this vital technology.
Fast forward to 2014, and right after the Olympics, you've got the Russians going into Crimea and then all the trouble we've seen in Ukraine. And here's Barack Obama, if I may, Garry Kasparov. This is in January of this year, talking with CNN, saying, look, let's... let's sit down and talk here. Military conflict, not the way to go.
We can exact higher and higher costs, and that's exactly what we're doing, and we can bring diplomatic pressure to bear. I don't think that it would be wise for the United States or the world to see a actual military conflict between the United States and Russia.
President Obama talking about Ukraine, diplomatic pressure, talking, and costs. He's talking sanctions, not inactivity, not doing nothing. What's the problem with that? Sure beats, it would seem, a military confrontation.
There are sanctions and sanctions. And these kind of sanctions are better than nothing. Still, you know, you could see Putin is unrepentant. He hasn't stopped his aggression in Ukraine. He moved into the west, into the east, eastern Ukraine, and if not for the heroic resistance of Ukrainian people, I mean, he could be probably taking over the great chunk of this country. And now he's in Syria, and let's remember what Obama said about red line for the Assad regime.
And this is the Russians sending more military equipment into Syria, right, as we speak, essentially, building an air base
there. Not military equipment. You know, it's just now they're building the military base with Russian military personnel. That's a huge difference.
Okay, excuse me. But they are putting a base down right in Assad's hometown and central home there over the very, very stern objections of Washington.
Yes, but it's not, you know, it's not accidental. You know, it followed the trip of one of the key members of Iranian Revolutionary Guard, by the way, on the list of international criminals, who visited Moscow. And after these discussions behind closed doors, Russians suddenly decided to send their troops all the way down to Syria. It seems that Russian-Iranian axis is planning to take over the entire region.
Maybe Barack Obama is not so much wrong as it's just early. He's shifting gears after a period of quite heavy militarism by the United States, and maybe it just takes time to get international affairs onto a new footing that's more about cooperation and talk than saber rattling.
I wish, you know, diplomacy works, you know. I'm not, you know.
It has many times.
It had, but it failed many times as well. So unfortunately, we're dealing with regimes that made confrontation with the free world, with the West, and especially with the United States, sort of as the as a core of their domestic policy. Great Satan will not retire. That's, you know, Iran keeps repeating that it will fight the United States. It will be doing everything to destroy the state of Israel. It will spread its dominance in the region. It will support terrorist organizations. And Vladimir Putin, you know, shows no sign of retreat by stepping up with his aggressive actions even beyond the boundaries of the former Soviet Union.
Why is it in Putin's interest to take on the United States?
It's not so much the United States. I don't think Putin is not that mad to look for the military confrontation with America or with NATO. Russian conventional troops are not strong enough.
I don't mean necessarily military, but he's been very adversarial in tone.
Yes, but this is very important for his image inside the country, because economy no longer offers him an excuse of staying in power forever. He's already in power for 15 years, and he made it very clear to the Russians and to the rest of the world that he would not leave Kremlin voluntarily. So I believe he's going to die in Kremlin. How and when, nobody knows, but that's definitely his intention, to stay in power forever. And every dictator at a certain point has no other choice but to look for enemies outside of the country to justify his grip on power. So that's why Putin must take on the free world. And of course, the United States is the best target, because it's the biggest and the most powerful country, and it makes Putin look stronger in the eyes of his oppressed subjects.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov about President Barack Obama's foreign policy. He's a critic of Vladimir Putin, now of Obama, too. Says he's too soft, not active enough. His new book coming out next month is Winter is Coming. He joins us from New York. Joseph Cirincione of the Plowshares Fund joins us in just a moment. Back in 2009, at the very beginning of his presidency, Barack Obama traveled to Cairo, Egypt, to address the Muslim world and try to start afresh.
I've come here to Cairo to seek a new beginning between the United States and Muslims around the world, one based on mutual interest and mutual respect, and one based upon the truth that America and Islam are not exclusive and need not be in competition.
And there in Cairo, he explained how the Iraq War informed his foreign policy.
Although I believe that the Iraqi people are ultimately better off without the tyranny of Saddam Hussein, I also believe that events in Iraq have reminded America of the need to use diplomacy and build international consensus to resolve our problems whenever possible.
A new President Barack Obama there in Cairo. Roll forward to May 2013, National Defense University, a couple of years after the beginning of the Arab Spring, a year before ISIS declared itself a worldwide caliphate. The president downplayed the challenge of extremist groups in a way.
Other of these groups are simply collections of local militias or extremists interested in seizing territory. And while we are vigilant for signs that these groups may pose a transnational threat, most are focused on operating in the countries and regions where they are based.
Joe Cirincione joins us in just a moment. First, a call or two for Garry Kasparov. Wes in Nashville, Tennessee. Wes, you're on the air with Garry Kasparov. What do you say?
Thank you, Tom. My question is, I hear a lot of general statements from your guest, and it's easy to play armchair quarterback, and it's a lot easier to press a key, on a keyboard, rather than knowing that when you press the button, it's not, something in a book, but actually, launching a missile. I mean, would your guest suggest sending troops in to, for example, Crimea? It's difficult when you know that your actions have real live consequences.
Garry Kasparov, make it real. Pick a point across this range of foreign engagements where you would have done something differently. Let's hear it.
Yeah, but it's you know, the problem has not started at the time when Putin invaded Crimea. It started much earlier. And by the way, in my book, I talked about mistakes made by George W. Bush in the relations with Russia, giving Putin too much credit as a democratically elected leader, and helped Putin to consolidate his power and just to turn it into an open dictatorship. So Putin believed America was weak and indecisive, and you cannot solve your problems, you know, with one dramatic move by sending troops somewhere. What is very important, and here I agree with President Obama, is to build international coalitions, but coalitions need leadership, not leading from behind. People are looking for strong leadership, and they used to have America as a leader, and what they could see in the last years is that America walked away. And without America, no coalition worked because, you know, for Putin or for Iranians or for North Koreans, no other country could represent the same potential threat.
So would you have put NATO or U.S. military to work in Ukraine, Crimea?
No, it's not about having troops on the ground. But let's not forget, in 1994, the United States, Bill Clinton as a president, United Kingdom, John Major as a prime minister, signed a memorandum which guaranteed Ukrainian territorial integrity in exchange for Ukraine giving up its nukes.
Yep.
And Ukraine at that time had the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world, bigger than China, UK, and France combined.
I mean, inherited from the Soviet Union, but nevertheless, okay.
But it was there, and the whole idea was that Russia would take nukes from Ukraine, also from Kazakhstan and Belarus, to be the only nuclear power, to make it easier to negotiate all the new nuclear treaties. And Boris Yeltsin's signature was also under this document. Now, I understand this document provided no guarantees, you know, in terms of military intervention or in any other forms. But the very fact that Putin could simply walk away from the agreement sends a message to every other country that without nukes, you know, your territorial integrity is not guaranteed. Do we think that it will be safer for us to have Japan and South Korea and Taiwan also pursuing nukes? And I'm sure they can do it even faster than Iranians because they're no longer relying on American nuclear umbrella.
The president's saying, though, he's making history with Iran on the nuclear agreement there. This was just last week, President Obama.
Our ability to solve a massive national security problem and prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons without resort to war is a historic achievement.
Others not so sure. Here's Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona just last week on the Senate floor talking crisis, vacuum, the wages of leading from behind.
This crisis didn't come out of nowhere, like an earthquake or a tornado. Instead, it's the predictable result of this administration's policies of leading from behind. As conflicts metastasized in the vacuum created through years of inaction by President Obama, and a total lack of American leadership.
John McCain there talking about the refugee crisis in Europe right now and hanging it around the neck of Barack Obama and his foreign policy. Gary Kasparov's new book is Winter is Coming. He joins us from New York. Joe Cirincione joins us right now from Washington, president of the Plowshares Fund. It's a global security foundation, member of Secretary of State John Kerry's International Security Advisory Board, counsel on foreign relations, author of Nuclear Nightmares, Bomb Scare, worked on the staff of the Committee on Armed Services at the House previously. Joe Cirincione, welcome back to On Point. What do you make of Gary Kasparov's tough analysis of Barack Obama's approach to the world?
Well, Tom, I'm honored to be on the same show with the Grand Chess Master. His games, especially with Anatoly Karpov, are epic, legendary.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to admire his brave and determined and consistent opposition to the new dictatorship of Vladimir Putin. And I completely agree with that. But I have to say I fundamentally disagree with the strategic view that he lays out. I understand it. This is a very common view laid out by many conservative or neoconservative critics of Obama. Ironically, after Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine back in February 2014, a lot of conservatives got kind of a man crush on Putin, and this must have annoyed Mr. Kasparov. They admired his forcefulness. That's a real leader, said Rudy Giuliani.
Mm.
If you want something, take it. And that was the philosophy of Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and George W. Bush. They wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein, so they did it. And then they didn't let things like facts or history or world opinion kind of get in their way. They did, and I believe this is what Mr. Kasparov is saying, they used military force as the lead instrument of U.S. foreign policy. They thought the invasion of Iraq would transform the Middle East, and it did. It transformed it into a disaster. We are still trying to clean up, trying to contain the mess that was started 12 years ago, 13 years ago, with the invasion of Iraq.
But how's that working, Joe? I mean, look around the world.
Yeah.
Here we are, almost 8 years in. It'll be the 8th year coming up. And we've certainly got plenty of woe. No doubt he inherited a lot of mess, but things aren't better with Russia. Ask Crimea and Ukraine how they feel about things. Look at Syria. Talk about a mess. You got the Islamic State, the refugee migrant crisis into Europe right now. If I were Taiwan looking at China, I'd be a little concerned, as Garry Kasparov says.
Right. So our tools for fixing this are somewhat limited. And the idea that you could just go somehow forcefully re-enter the Middle East with what? American divisions? A new Marshall Plan? What exactly are you going to do when you have this kind of chaos? You have to have a consistent, calm approach to this, and that's the one I do. Let's take a look at Ukraine. Let's just stay on Ukraine because this is the one that concerns
people.
And
then we'll take it to Mr. Kasparov. Yes, please.
The most. You know, this is not the rise of Nazi Germany, what Putin is doing. Russia is a weak power. Its main strengths are its nuclear weapons, which do threaten us. And so we have an interest in arms control agreements that can cut those down, and its ability to meddle on its borders. But it's the United States that's the major power in the world, that has the most powerful military in the world, the greatest economy. We are the ones with the alliances. So when something like Ukraine happens, we oppose it, but we can contain it. Going in with military force in Ukraine would have inflamed it. It would have just justified
what about tougher
Putin's
sanctions
invasion.
Or something? Garry Kasparov says, look, they gave up their nuclear weapons, and now they're facing this real threat, already have lost territory to Moscow. And the message to others is, get nukes.
I was on the International Security Advisory Board, as you said, but my opinions on your show are mine alone and don't represent the department. Mm-hmm. But I did do a study with the advisory board last year, liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats. We took a 7-month deep dive into Ukraine policy, U.S.-Russia relations, and we came out basically supporting the current posture with some modifications. Yes, we recommended some stronger sanctions. Yes, we recommended reassuring our NATO allies. Remember, Ukraine is not a part of NATO. Russia is making threatening moves on the borders of the Baltic states. Mm-hmm. So reassure those countries and make them understand that any invasion of NATO is an invasion that affects all of us, and there would be a strong military response. That's basically worked, what you see.
So
this Russian crisis is contained.
And would you say overall the Obama policy toward the world is working? Just be patient? Because it can be unnerving looking out there.
It can be. But remember, the crisis that we have are the result of structural weakness and disorder in certain parts of the world. They're not fundamental threats to the national security interests of the United States. We don't want him to be shipping more military aid to Syria, but he's doing that because Assad is collapsing. Assad is weakening in power, not going stronger. There's not going to be a Russian takeover of the Middle East. That's way beyond Russia's capabilities.
Yeah, I got it. Let us pick it up there. We're talking with Garry Kasparov, Joe Cirincione. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Garry Kasparov. This is about structural weakness.
Yes, please. Because there was so much misleading information. It's just one is, you know, it's this. It's there was one recommendation that John omitted. It's to supply Ukraine with lethal weapons. It's a veto-proof majority in both in Senate and in the House, and almost all experts recommended almost unanimously to provide these kind of weapons to Ukraine. Obama administration refused doing so. It's not just, you know, supplying them with small weapons. We're not talking about, you know, missiles and tanks and planes. It's about anti-tank missiles, small weapon and some others. No, but it's about psychology. Let's not forget, Obama, how many years ago, said Assad's days are numbered. He's still there. And Vladimir Putin said Assad would stay, and everybody in the world could see who stands behind his client. Vladimir Putin shows his strengths, and it's not in Ukraine now, but it's in Syria. What do you mean it's contained? Putin knows that the price of further invasion of Ukraine is too high, mainly in body bags, because Ukraine is fighting back. But now he's in Syria, and he's there with Iran.
And it's very clear that Russians and Iranians eventually will take control of the whole region, you know, unless America does something dramatic with allies, who, by the way, do not believe that America is behind them, neither Arab monarchies in the Gulf or Israel.
Joe, the psychology here has shifted under Obama, Garry Kasparov says, and it's working against stability.
Putin is isolated in the world. Who are his allies besides Belarus? What respect does this man have in the world?
His planes are flying into Syria
collapsing.
Right now.
He's got a couple
Hitler
of minor moves
in the world.
He's got a couple of he's moving his pawns around. He doesn't have any real major pieces to move, and the United States does. I don't believe that the idea that Iran and Russia are going to take over the Middle East is absurd. Iran has the weakest military in the region. They spend a tenth of what Saudi Arabia does on their military, and they put all the other countries together, Iran doesn't have the military power. And Russia and Iran have historically contended with each other, not allied with each other. It's a nonsense scenario that he's painting. This doom and gloom is going to happen unless we do what? Invade Syria? If you did what Mr. Kasparov wants in his op-ed, we would be having wars in Ukraine, Iran, and Syria. No one wants that.
That's not true. In my op-ed, I did not argue for using military force. That's not correct. Yeah. And in Ukraine, I never said that boots on the ground were needed. I talked about comprehensive military assistance to the Ukrainian government that was fighting Russian aggression. Now, regarding the Middle East, the simple question is, you're talking about the mess. Now, but this mess, was not in 2007 or 2008. I didn't see hundreds of thousands of Syrian or Iraqi refugees on the shores of Europe. And the way you are blaming Bush 43 administration for mess today reminds me of the typical Soviet practice of blaming the previous communist leader for all the problems. Obama, God's sake, is in the White House for 7 years, almost 7 years. And it's time to talk about the results of his foreign policy and stop talking about all the mistakes made by Bush, Clinton, Bush 41 or Ronald Reagan.
So would you have gone into Syria to make good on the assertion that Assad would not stand, Garry Kasparov?
Yeah, but let's go back to 2009. In 2009, there was a great opportunity to support green revolution in Iran. Let's not forget, Iranian people were on the rise. And Iranians, for at least a month, they were hesitant. They were not sure whether they could go full Monty against these protesters because American troops were next door. And Obama did absolutely nothing. Not even a moral support was offered to these brave Iranians who were trying to demise religious dictatorship. And of course, it emboldens Iranian hardliners. They recognized that America was too weak, military option was not on the table, and they became more and more arrogant, pressing not only in Iran, but also in Iraq and eventually in Syria and in the whole region. And by the way, Saudi Arabia could spend more money than Iran on military, but Iranian proxies are fighting successfully against Saudi army in Yemen.
Garry, lays it out there. What do you say, Joe?
Well, I'm looking at his op-ed, and it seems to say that the U.S. should have acted on Mr. Obama's red line when Assad defied the U.S. president and used chemical weapons. What does acted mean? Isn't that military force?
Isn't that the debate,
was to use military force in Syria? You're saying we should have gone to war.
Yeah, but the moment U.S. president says red line, he must stand behind his words. It was his mistake maybe to say red line, but if he said red line and walked away—
But it created this vacuum. It destroyed
American reputation in the region.
And we've got the Islamic State now, and we've got many thousands washing up on the shores of Europe. War? Who wanted that? Garry Kasparov, please stand by in New York. Joe Cirincione in Washington. It's good to have both of you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov and Joe Cirincione of the Plowshares Fund about President Barack Obama's foreign policy. Kasparov is a critic of Vladimir Putin, now of Obama too, says he's too soft. Joe Cirincione says, not so bad, not so bad at all. Here's John Kerry. This is a year ago or so, July 2014, supporting President Obama's diplomatic approach, foreign policy strategy.
Every fundamental issue of conflict today, the United States is in the center, leading and trying to find an effort to make peace where peace is very difficult. And I think the American people ought to be proud of what this president has done in terms of peaceful diplomatic engagement rather than quick trigger, deploying troops, starting or engaging in a war of choice.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and SK. SK, thanks for calling. You are on the air.
I would like to compare Mr. Kasparov's ideas to those of Premier Nikita Khrushchev when he was sitting in the United Nations banging his heel on the desk saying, we will bury you. Mr. Kasparov's ideas are those of the, would be best explained by reading Russian literature and their morose view of the world in general.
But Khrushchev was threatening the United States and the West. Garry Kasparov says he wants to defend those.
I'm speaking of the, not the remote possibility, but that the Russian idea of what the world is like is that you sit around criticizing other people and not having any idea of what a good move would be. I am surprised that you are giving this individual a forum from which to vent his totally Russian views about what the world should be like.
We're open to all kinds of views.
I'm curious how many countries your listener visited. I visited nearly 100 countries in the world, you know, in all continents. So, and I represent, you know, global views much more than anybody who calls from Omaha and just, you know, demanding that I would not be given the chance to speak.
Respect to Omaha. We won't pigeonhole you, Garry, but let me ask you, SK, how does the world look to you these days after 7 years of Obama's presidency? How does the foreign affairs outlook look?
It looks to me like Mr. Obama has had an extremely difficult time doing anything, much less as Mr. Kasparov wants to say, that he's been in office for 7 years, why hasn't he done something a little bit better?
Lots of headwinds for Obama, no question about that. Garry Kasparov, we grant you citizen of the world status, but what about
America? On America happened under Obama's watch. How many hackers attacks? It was dramatic effect by Chinese hackers, by Russian hackers. It's the first time in my memory that Chinese and Russian military ships, you know, entered American territorial waters, tested American resolve. And I can keep going on and on by counting numerous provocations of facts around the world against America's interest.
Are you somehow blind to a different way that over time will pay out by not going, you know, hard-nosed immediately in every instance? Is there something else that this administration may be eliciting? Peace.
Look, you know, I'm a good scholar of history, and I know what's happened in history, and we can go all the way back to the 30s. We can look to the 70s. At the end of the day, the regimes that believe that confrontation is a key element of their domestic policy, international confrontation, they will not negotiate in good faith. For them, negotiation is just, you know, it's a temporary break in their active policy of pursuing.
You're talking
their
the Putin
interests.
Mindset there, you would
Putin,
say.
But also Iran. Iran is a prime sponsor of terrorism in the world, and it keeps talking about expanding its terrorist network. And of course, hundreds of billion dollar plus that Iran will receive as a result of this deal will be spent not to improve living standard in Iran, but to boost the Iranian military, and of course to support terrorist organizations like Hamas and Hezbollah.
Joe Cirincione, what about that in particular? And do you see the Obama way building the foundation for a new kind of international relations, or Garry Kasparov says it's naive?
Well, in particular, Iran, as the Treasury Secretary has repeatedly said, will get about $50 billion, not the the 150 or 100, and that most of that is almost certainly going to go to meet some of the unmet demands. They have about $500 billion in infrastructure demands for their structure. But let's go to the bigger picture.
Yep.
Still, it's cash. And, you know, some of it's going to go to the Revolutionary Guard and some of it will help, but it's really on the margins. It's not going to fundamentally change any of the strategic calculation in the Middle East. But what is this deal that has just been struck, this Iran agreement that the New York Times calls one of the most consequential accords in recent diplomatic history. And this is a concrete example that compares what Mr. Kasparov says and what the Obama strategy is. Mr. Obama inherited a disaster of an Iranian program that under the Bush administration had gone from zero centrifuges to 6,000
nuclear
by the
program,
time Bush left, the nuclear program, but by the time he left. And the Obama approach had been to name call and to threaten and to try to put sanctions on, but mostly unilateral, and to threaten invasion.
The Bush approach.
The Bush approach. Mm-hmm. And as Colin Powell said, the Iranian program was on a superhighway by the time the administration ended. The Obama approach now puts that on a detour. It dramatically reduces the nuclear program. It's going to be a fraction of what it currently is. Two-thirds of the centrifuges ripped out. 98% of the low-enriched uranium shipped out of the country. The entire plutonium reactor gutted. The reactor core pulled out, drilled with holes, and filled with concrete. And this, with the support of the entire world, the P5 plus one, a global agreement. This is being praised around the world. The only place this agreement is controversial is in Israel and in the Congress of the United States. Globally, we look fabulous for negotiating this, for solving what many people thought was the gravest proliferation threat in the world, something that will now roll back Iran's ability and its influence, whatever else Iran does in the region, and nobody has any illusions that this is somehow going to change the Iranian regime. Whatever else they do, they won't have a nuclear weapon to back it up. And that is a huge strategic accomplishment.
Garry Kasparov, it's a triumph.
Okay. Let's remind your listeners about the beginning of negotiations. The original goal was to release sanctions in exchange for Iran giving up its domestic nuclear program entirely. Then it was changed to no enrichment. Then U.S. conceded that, but limited. Then made another concession that enrichment could continue, but not forever. It's very easy to make a deal if you concede everything. This is not diplomacy, it's capitulation. And while mentioning Israel and U.S. Congress, what about Arab nations in the Gulf? Are Saudis happy with this deal or other countries in the region? Is Turkey happy with this deal? Because everybody understands this agreement does not stop Iran from getting a bomb. It just takes a bit longer. No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. Iran, they are not going to get a bomb now. How are they going to build a bomb now?
You said now. But basically, the infrastructure that allows them to move forward is intact. It's frozen. But we have to rely on inspections.
And
who is going to inspect Iranians? They have been cheating all the time. Now, let's not forget, in 1994,
this
we heard this argument about North Korea.
Ever seen.
It's about North Korea. John, you remember North Korea negotiation? Yeah, the same story. South Koreans were dead against it, but Clinton pushed it through. What happened 20 years later? The regime is still in place, the most unhuman regime in the world today, and they have nukes. And North Korea is a tiny country. It has no economy, unlike Iran that has massive population and a huge influence, both religious and political, not only in the region, but across the world.
Let me get a little third-party voice in here. Here was Colin Powell, of course, served in the Bush administration, talking with NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. As Joe says, he says things were moving rapidly down the nuclear path before. In these last years, he's happy with this deal. Here's Powell.
They have been on a super highway for the last 10 years to create a nuclear weapon or a nuclear weapons program with no speed limit. And in the last 10 years, they've gone from 136 centrifuges up to something like 19,000 centrifuges. This agreement will bring them down to 5,000 centrifuges. All of these will be under IAEA supervision. And I think this is a good outcome.
Not gone, but a good outcome, says Colin Powell. Here's Betty calling from Boston. Betty, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Tom. I think that every war that the United States has been involved in since World War II has been a complete failure. And so many hundreds of thousands of civilians, as well as combatants have been killed on all sides and wounded. And then something in the 1980s, when Reagan was president, the United States secretly supplied poison gas to Iraq while they were fighting Iran.
Yeah.
So we are no one to point the finger at somebody else.
Are you happy with the way the world looks today, Betty?
Well, truthfully, no, but we should take care of our own people, and the United States also is really based on tremendous force. We invaded Mexico. We took half of Mexico, which is Texas and the other states. We've decimated the American Indians who were native people here, and I feel the biggest threat to world peace at the present time is Netanyahu, and so.
Betty, it's a long list. I want to keep it up to date as we can, but we acknowledge all that. But we're trying to keep it right up to date here. You said let's not go to war. All right, Jamal in Detroit, what do you say?
I hear the arguments of both of your guests. I hear both sides of the argument. There are some things that Obama should have and could have stood stronger on, the red line and Syria being one of them. You can't say this is a line and then there be no immediate consequences when it's evident that that has changed.
Okay.
But also, he inherited a stretched out, ineffective geopolitical strategy in the midst of an economic meltdown. He had to address that.
Yep.
And the rest of the world now is testing us on that.
So over time, do you think his approach is one we should stick with, or is it effective,
yes,
Jamal?
I think over time we need to address the fact that we can't be everything to everyone in all places. But America is special, and when we say something, we have to mean it. Otherwise, don't say it.
Jamal in Detroit, I appreciate your call. One more, and we'll take it to our guest, John in Richmond, Vermont. John, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Strategia, Mr. Kasparov. I'm impressed by his call for a different approach, meaning that if we have a more proactive approach, that we're more likely to anticipate issues coming down the pike. We always seem to be surprised by whatever Russia's doing. You know, as a chess player, you have to anticipate the strategies of your opponent. I don't know that we can say, well, we're taking this one approach on the Iranian missiles and then let everything else go, oh, what was that? I think the change in approach is appropriate. What form that takes, I can't speak to that. But he's pointed out too many things, the computer issues, sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let us pick it up right there. Joe Cirincione, you generally support the president, but if you could tweak this foreign policy, if you could adjust it, how would you adjust it?
Well, every once in a while I am asked for advice on how to tweak it, and we do. And I want to assure your listeners that the government of the United States is not led by very, very stupid people. The Trump line. These are some of the smartest people I know. And it's true, the world does surprise us every now and then. Things happen. But I find the United States is very good at quickly adapting to this. For example, Mr. Putin's what they call hybrid warfare, where he was invading Ukraine, but not with actual troops, putting them in, as they say, little green men with no insignias on their uniforms. We are now developing approaches to counter that kind of hybrid warfare should he try the same thing in Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia and Poland. We're doing that. We're beefing up our support for the Eastern European NATO allies who are most nervous about this to make sure that there's no miscalculation here, that any infringement, cyber or physical, on their national security threats will be met with the united NATO response. So we do get surprised every once in a while. I think the United States is in a terrific position to adapt to this, to contain those surprises, to develop counter strategies to roll them back. I myself am not worried about our ability to manage these kinds of crises in the world. The thing that keeps me up at night is nuclear weapons. And there it's not Mr. Putin, it's Pakistan and what could happen there.
Gary Kasparov, if we gave you the reins of power for a few months here, what steps would you take to, by your lights, position the U.S., the world, better in the years ahead?
Look, I started this conversation saying that, you know, this the world politics works in seasons, and it's more like a pendulum. And it was pushed by George W. one side, then it moved to in the opposite direction. And I think it's almost inevitable in 2016, you know, it will be moving, I don't know how fast, but back to the some form of international engagement. Because Americans, they keep recognizing that the world is not a safe place. And
but surely you're not saying the U.S. is not engaged. I mean, not engaged at all?
Oh, leading from behind is not engagement. And again, I believe that the reputation of America has been badly damaged by this administration, because the way I see it, as somebody who travels around the world, you know, and also from the moral point of view, somebody who was raised, born and raised in a communist country. And we believe that, you know, America, as was said by JFK and Ronald Reagan, was a seat on a hill. And it's like we knew that America was a leader of the coalition that protected the free world. Now, this image has been badly damaged.
Joe, can we step away from that role of, you know, leading the charge in this Manichaean struggle?
And We are still the leader of the free peoples of the world, and we are going to be that for decades to come. I'm proud of my country. I'm proud of the way we've been leading over the last 7 years.
Garry Kasparov's essay is, there's a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. His book, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped, out late October. Joined us today from New York. Mr. Kasparov, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Joe Cirincione is president of the Plowshares Fund, joined us today from Washington, author of Nuclear Nightmares and Bomb Scare. Joe, thanks as always for being here.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Listeners, check out all the comments at onpointradio.org, on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.